everyone, and welcome to The Motivation Mindset. I'm Risa Williams. I'm a licensed therapist here in Los Angeles, and I'm the book author of The Ultimate Time Management Toolkit and The Procrastination Playbook, which is my newest book coming out this fall. So keep an eye out for it. And today on the show, I have a special announcement. We're doing a double book giveaway. I'll be giving away a copy of my book, The Ultimate Self-Esteem Toolkit, and Erica Curtis, who's my guest today, will be giving away a copy of her new book.
Hi, this is Erica, and in our double book giveaway, I'll be giving away my new book, Working with Anger Creatively. The book takes a compassionate look at anger as useful information and energy, and it offers 70 practical creative activities to direct that information and energy for meaningful change.
So if you'd like to win those two books, follow me at Risa Williams Therapy on Instagram. Find the contest post, leave a comment, and follow the instructions, and you're automatically entered. So tune in on April 17th to find out who won. And now on this episode, Erica Curtis is joining me to talk about email anxiety. It turns out emails are really stressing people out, so we've got some practical tips on how to deal with emails. So stay tuned for this episode on getting things done without all the stress. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm here with a special segment of the Brain Boost with Erica Curtis, who is returning. She is one of my favorite guest co-hosts. And today we are going to be talking about email and text as forms of communication and how sometimes these forms of communication really stress us out.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because one of the pieces of research that I came across said that most people receive around 120 emails every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had no idea if I received that many. You know, I was like, do I really get 120? Do I get more? Do I get less? I really don't have.
I mean, a lot of it's spam.
And a lot of it's spam.
In my case.
Yeah. And since I've been, you know, reading the research up on this and preparing for our talk today, I've been even more conscious of how do I manage my emails? I know one of the things I do is say, you know, I try to respond within 24 hours.
Yeah.
Maybe 48 hours. And that actually sets a precedent so that, you know, people don't necessarily expect me to respond within 5 minutes.
Right.
And so then I think it actually helps the receiver, the other person, right? Because then they don't feel anxious if I don't respond right away because they know that I'll respond within 24 hours and they can trust that.
Right, right. So it's kind of about finding your own way of setting time boundaries, which we've talked about on the show a lot, with email and text communication, which is constantly expecting us to be instant and on call. So we need to look at finding a good middle set point of what is reasonable. And what Erica's saying is for her, it's like having a limit of 24 hours to 48 hours. That's reasonable. And if you say that out loud, of course, it sounds reasonable. Like 24 hours is still really fast.
Absolutely. And I think what you're talking about, Reese, also is mindset, right? It's almost like the self-soothing or reassuring that it's reasonable. It's okay, right? And really feeling the reasonableness of that.
Yeah.
Right. Rather than holding that stress and then just talking to ourselves like, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay if I don't. Right. But actually getting into the mindset because, you know, they've done some studies that show common solutions to email overload, for example, are strategies like batching or time blocking, right? Which essentially is setting aside time to answer your emails. But people who experience the kind of stress and anxiety about that overload that you're talking about, they feel anxious when they're not checking their email.
He said a lot of people have a fear of missing out.
Well, I think a couple of things come to mind. I mean, one, I think, is actually letting people know that we are taking times out from our devices. And not that you have to do it every time, but just generally that you value and are trying to practice time away so that if you don't get back to people right away, they're going to be understanding and maybe even it'll catch on. And a lot of my clients will share with me when they turn off their phone at night after, say, 8 p.m. or they don't turn it on until 8 a.m. in the morning, that they'll have messages saying, why haven't you responded? Or they'll have 10 messages from the same person. Are you there? Are you there? And then that gives them anxiety when they turn their phone back on. So I think simply letting people know, hey, I have screen downtime every day. If I ever don't get back to you, you can expect a response within X amount of time. And that creates a supportive culture in the workplace, socially, that normalizes that and tells everybody else, it's not you that I'm not responding to. Yeah. I'm just taking a little time away.
I think the key there is consistency, though. Mm-hmm. I think when we're trying to model it to people in our lives, it gets really confusing if we're kind of all over the place. Right. If we say we have downtime, but then we're, you know, answering a group text at midnight, now we've sent a mixed message.
That's right.
Again, it's about like getting aligned with your message and holding yourself accountable. Like, okay, I said I was going to have screen downtime. Why am I going on Instagram then? You know, why am I doing all of this? Could I be a little bit more aligned with what I'm saying and doing so that it's clear to other people? Oh, yeah. You know, she really doesn't pick up her phone after 9 o'clock.
I think the consistency also helps reset our own nervous systems as well. So it helps interpersonally, and it also helps on the inside, because absolutely, if we're used to responding right away, or, you know, even if somebody says it's urgent, I need you right away. I mean, the reality is if you wait a couple hours, they might even solve the problem on their own.
Right.
They might say,
that's often the case.
Right. Yeah. But we get that rush of adrenaline of, oh, I've got to respond. And when we're responding, what we're actually doing is a form of self-soothing, because we respond, our stress level goes down temporarily. But what we don't see is that we're creating a long-term pattern of hypervigilance. Oh, I responded. Good. I feel better. Oh, there's another one. Hypervigilance. Oh, I responded. I feel better. And so we need to give ourselves enough consistency of not responding to let our nervous system reset and say, oh, it's okay. It's safe to not respond right away. So we're creating a new internal pattern.
I like what you're saying about hypervigilance. That's such an important term to keep in mind. The problem with being hypervigilant with emails and texts is that you're kind of spiking your own cortisol and adrenaline sometimes to the point where that's a normal state for you.
That's right.
And what Erica's describing is it's okay sometimes to not respond, not have that spike, and then feel what that feels like inside your nervous system to kind of just let things go a little calmer and stay in that calmer state more. Because that is one thing that a lot of the neuroscience studies talk about, is that we are getting these stress hormones released in our bodies sometimes with these, you know, if you're talking about 120 emails a day, that's the potential to spike that 100 times a day. And we need to have periods of time where that isn't being spiked so we can retrain our nervous system and think about what calm feels like and think about what like silence feels like digitally, you know?
Right. Yes. Well, and what brings to mind too is that when we're under these states of hyperarousal, you know, we can be extraordinarily efficient because we're being driven to that fight flight response, which is action, respond, text back, send the email. Open it.
Yeah. You know,
continue. So we can maybe get a lot done, but we're not very effective. And so when we're under those heightened states of stress, and when I say heightened states of stress, I think it's important to acknowledge that we might not realize that we're feeling stressed. We might just feel like we're responding and that we're mobilized and that we might not equate that with stress, because I know for myself, I'm very good at like, oh no, I'm not stressed. I'm just really productive.
You're just checking off the boxes. But sometimes that checking the boxes feeling is the precursor to a burnt out, stressed out feeling at the end of the day. You're just catching the stress as it's rising, as opposed to already flared up.
You know me so well.
I have been there. I understand this feeling. And then, you know, you wonder why at 10 o'clock at night, now your heart's racing, you can't turn off the intrusive thoughts. You're thinking, why didn't I do that? I should answer that. And that's because you got that stress going.
That's right.
And it's way harder to calm down when you're at that level.
That's right.
Versus catching it when you're at a lower level, where it just feels like a to-do list.
Right. And what's interesting is when we are under stress or in that hyper-mobilized state, we're not reading things as carefully.
Yeah.
We're not processing language as well. We're not picking our words as well. I read one study that showed that as people were on email for longer, that they started using more angry words.
Right.
Like just subtle little cues of agitation. You know, and you see this in people's emails. They stop saying hello.
Yeah.
They stop saying good morning, how are you, before they ask for that request. They stop signing off. It just becomes this short burst of
demands.
Demands.
It's like, why haven't you done this thing now? Where is the thing? Where is the project?
Right.
And that is spiking the person reading it stress, you know, because we're not being very gentle in our language at this point.
Stress feedback loop, right?
Yeah. And I joke about this all the time on the show, like step away from the computer.
You're not
in a good mental space to read this email. And what I find is I step away. Sometimes I go back to the email and I'm like, oh, this is just a regular request. What was my brain thinking?
And it comes from that state, that physiological state of stress, because our brains just are not as efficient or effective at really interpreting
context.
Content,
instructions.
Absolutely.
Like basic instructions, right? Yes. You can't do it when you're stressed out.
Problem solving, information.
Or even just deciphering what is the message behind what they're asking me to do. And I think that's where we go wrong. On the show, we've talked about meta messages versus what someone's saying on the surface. This gets really tricky with texts and emails, as you know from your work with clients. We often misread the meta message.
Oh, yes.
We think like someone sends a quick text, it's short and gruff. Oh, they're angry. Oh, I did something wrong. You know, what mistake did I make? We put it on ourselves in a negative way when they could just be waiting to pick their kid up at school.
One of my colleagues calls it a two-dimensional platform on which we try to communicate three-dimensional material or content, right?
It's so true.
When, you know, emotion is three-dimensional and even social connection is three-dimensional and text is a two-dimensional platform. And we have the addition of emojis, which I make full use of because I think of maybe my need and my appreciation for the fact that emotion is very easily misconstrued. You know, something else I realized I did, Risa, talking to you right now, or that I tend to do, is if I rewrite a text or an email, like if I'm on my third, like I'll write it and I'll edit it. And then if I'm on my third go at it, I will stop and I pick up the phone and I call the person.
Yeah.
And I use that as a cue that my nervous system is somehow feeling, you know, insecure, anxious, uncertain about how the person's going to receive it.
Yeah.
How the person will interpret it. Yeah. If I'm wordsmithing an email or a text that much,
that's a cue.
It's better for me to just pick up the phone because then I feel better about the interaction and I feel like I actually have more influence over this connection and over this communication when the person can hear my inflections, when they can hear my voice. And if there is a misunderstanding or a question, I can clarify it right there and then.
Right.
So that's another kind of rule of thumb I have. And that's much less stressful to me and time saving because I'd rather have a 10-minute conversation with somebody than wordsmith an email for 10 minutes and then worry about it for 3 hours.
Right. And then miscommunicate it completely. And now they're confused because a lot of stuff can't be boiled down into a text. A lot of stuff is too complicated to sit there trying to explain it in a way they're going to get it in 5 seconds.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to call people, but people these days tend to have a bad reaction sometimes to getting calls. You know, we're kind of living in a time where seeing a phone number pop up also increases our stress. Like, oh no, you know, do I have the bandwidth to sign up for talking right now? And that's interesting too.
Well, and I think a lot of people also avoid either picking up the phone to call or picking up the phone to receive a call because, like you said, of that anxiety, and we're almost out of practice.
Yeah.
And so people feel anxious that they're not going to do it well. And I think having some kind of very simple way to start a conversation, if it's in response to an email, even if it's a colleague, right? I mean, that sounds like insane, like to pick up the phone and talk to a colleague.
Yeah.
Right. But to be able to say, you know, like, hey, I got your email. I would, you know, I have a lot of thoughts about it. Would love to talk through it with you rather than trying to put it all in an email.
Right. And I think a lot of people tend to also cushion the call with a text or an email saying, hey, do you have time to talk? Do you have bandwidth to talk right now about a quick thing in the email? Or just give context, right? Because none of us like the expression, hey, we need to talk or something like this. It'll spike your stress.
Principal's office.
Yeah, you're in trouble now. We need to talk.
Right.
I have something I need to talk to you about, right? It's how we use our language. And how can we think about using language in a gentler way, knowing that everybody's stressed out by communication these days? Like, how can we pad it a little bit? Do you have the bandwidth to talk right now? Is great. Or I like when people say, hey, can we just talk quickly on the phone about this? Again, it's giving them context, not just, can I talk to you right now? Because instantly then you're thinking, oh, there's a problem. Oh, there's a crisis.
Yeah. And probably a lot of that came from childhood, right? I mean,
that kind of voice of like, you're in trouble.
Right. Like, we need to talk. I mean, how many times did our parents say, we need to talk when it was a good thing? Or a teacher or a boss, you know, we need to talk.
So again, maybe a rule of thumb for everyone listening is give a little context. You know, I know there's all this pressure to be brief in our communication, but sometimes giving a tiny bit of context will make that communication go so much smoother.
Absolutely. I think we're in our heads so much that sometimes we either I know I do this. I think I've actually said out loud something that I just had a full conversation with myself in my own head. Right.
Yeah.
It's like I've had this whole conversation and then I might say just the punchline. Right. And so trying to be aware of that and, you know, and going back. And I actually just sent two text messages this morning to two different people saying, hey, I don't know if I thanked you for, you know, this thing.
Yeah.
I know in my head I did. I know I appreciated it when I got it.
Right.
But I can't, and I know I spoke to you on the phone, but I don't know if I actually said thank you. So I just wanted to send a text right now and say, I really appreciated that card. Because I realized it days later, gosh, I don't know if I did or not. So why not go ahead and either be redundant and do it again just to check.
Because it won't hurt.
It won't hurt.
It won't hurt to be redundant if it's a good thing.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's something to keep in mind is that we're so overloaded with demands. We need to be a little more mindful of putting out positive communication as well as demands. And I think in this day and age, we tend to be a little heavy on the demand, like writing people because we need something. Versus just trying to communicate in a positive way, give someone a little praise, encouragement, a thank you. All these things are so important that we don't lose them over time because of the brevity of communication.
You know, it's such an interesting point because I'll just share with you, Risa. I've never shared this with you, but when I get an email from you, I actually like light up. I get this little like happy feeling when I just see your name. I do. So if I'm at work and I'm in between clients and I'm checking my email and I'm like, I have an email from Risa.
Aww.
And I actually, it feels like authentic connection, actually, when I open it, when I just see your name, because I think you and I have this pattern of communication in our email that's very authentic and affirming. And when we say, how are you? We're really saying, how are you? Like, how are you? How are you doing? And you're specific. How is your book going?
Right.
You know, it's not just, hey, how are you? When
could
do you
I have
time
X, Y, and Z, you
right.
know, like, which is what we're used to, kind of this like robot spam email, like, hope you're doing well. Please get me the pages by Thursday. you know, right? And that's it. Feel very connected to this person. It could be a robot for all I know.
Well, now they have that automatic generate, like that generated text. Yeah. You can just hit return or tab and it automatically writes it for you, right? Again, time saving maybe, but how is it perpetuating this stress and anxiety around checking email when that authentic connection isn't there? And it doesn't take long, right? And so I find it's like these little pleasant glimmers. When I open my email and I see an email from you, I'll go straight there and open it. And then I feel a little bit more uplifted, even if it's a to-do or a work-related thing that we're collaborating on.
Yeah,
I feel that connection. So then I feel like I'm in a better headspace to then go and open my other emails and really be present to fully read them and fully respond to them. Without that kind of hustle bustle feeling and missing a question or not fully responding or not offering that connection to other people.
Oh, that's so sweet. And I feel the same way about your emails as well. So I guess something we can take forward is it's a clunky system of communicating. But within that clunky system, how can we be authentic? How can we be a little more mindful of how we're wording things, knowing that it is generally spiking most people's stress? How can we be a little bit more mindful? And you won't always be able to do it. Sometimes you're writing things off the cuff or like, you know, you're on your way somewhere. You only have 3 seconds to get the email out. So it's imperfect in nature. But generally, could we create a percentage of time that we are taking a few seconds to think about what we're going to say? And if you're not in the right frame of mind, can you take a few seconds to step back, reassess, bring the stress down, and look at it through new eyes later? Because I guarantee if you step away from the computer sometimes and look at the thing again, it changes what the thing says sometimes. That's in your head, right? To your own brain.
Yes. And one more quick hack before we wrap this conversation up, which I meant to bring up and then I forgot because I was so enthralled with our conversation, was I came across this concept called email apnea. Have you heard of this, Risa?
Oh, no.
It's like sleep apnea, but when we're on email, it's fascinating.
Whoa.
So when they've done research looking at the way people breathe when they are on a device, people tend to become very shallow in their breathing and even hold their breath.
Yeah.
Lengths of time.
See, and that just proves what we're saying, that people are stressed out.
People are stressed out. And so something we can also, another way to hack into our system, if we really need to be in front of the email, if we really can't put our electronic devices in a timeout or take time off from them, to pay attention to your breathing. Because people, like, it was like 80% of people hold their breath. They stop breathing. And it is
cutting off oxygen from your own brain.
Right? It impacts our immune system. It impacts our ability to decrease inflammation and fight infections. I mean, it is insane the impact this has. So be conscious of your breathing.
Yeah.
A deep inhale in through your nose, a long, slow, full exhale out, and do that several times while your email. I've been noticing this since I read about this. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing it. Never noticed it before I came across that concept. So I think that's a good tip.
That's a great takeaway. So everyone listening out there, the next time before you open your emails or your text, take a deep breath. And then as you're reading it, think, do I need to step away or can I answer this from a more mindful place? Thanks, Erica, so much for all your input.
Thanks, Risa. This is fun.
If you're enjoying tools discussed on the show, please visit risawilliams.com. There you can learn more about my wonderful guests, upcoming episodes, my books and planners, and classes and workshops. You can also follow me on Instagram at risawilliamstherapy for free giveaways and discounts. I'm Risa Williams, and we're out of time. Thanks for listening.